Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Adi Oladipo here. Thank you so much for downloading Fight Night Extra. Remember, we're here every single Tuesday live on TalkSport 2, myself and the great Gareth A. Davis. If you can't join us live, remember to subscribe to the Fight Night podcast channel. So much other great content there as well, such as Fight Night, Fight of My Life, and even the Mike Tyson story, The Boy from Brownsville.
This is Fight Night Extra on TalkSport 2.
If you love your boxing and your MMA, this is the show for you, Fight Night Extra, with myself, Adi Oladipo, and the great Gareth A. Davis, where we discuss all the latest from the world of combat sports. Today, we're going to discuss the postponement of Saturday night's all-female card headlined by Clarissa Shields and Savannah Marshall. We are going to hear from the promoter of that event, Ben Shalom, about why it was right to call off the event after the passing of the Queen late last week. We'll also be turning our attention to a huge trilogy fight this weekend as Saul Canelo Alvarez and Gennady Golovkin take to the ring for a third time. We'll ask if Triple G can upset the odds against one of the world's finest fighters at the grand old age of 40. Less than 2 weeks to go before one of the biggest fights in the heavyweight division this year between Joseph Parker and Joe Joyce. We are going to be speaking to Parker shortly about his preparations for the fight and why he believes it can catapult him towards a world title shot. And plus, we're going to discuss an incredible night in the UFC at the weekend, which saw one of the organization's biggest names, Nate Diaz, bow out of a win over Tony Ferguson. Look, don't go anywhere. This is Fight Night Extra on TalkSport 2. Gareth, let's kick things off with the cancellation of the Savannah Marshall, Clarissa Shields fight, obviously the co-main event as well. Alicia Baumgardner, Michaela Meyer, all-female fight. It was taken by, I guess, Ben Shalom and Adam Smith with advice from the British Boxing Board of Control to postpone the event until October the 15th. First question, straight off the bat, was it the right decision?
Definitely the right decision. And I think in the, as time plays out in with the longness of time, we'll look back on it and see that it was the right decision, in my view. I know you don't share that view, but we can talk around this because yeah. I think when I was at the press conference on Thursday and events were unfolding, we were at the Plaza Hotel in Canary Wharf and, you know, suddenly newsreaders were appearing in black ties and there was a somber mood coming over the nation. A huge announcement was coming. Mm. I think when the reality of, I'm going to call her the mother of the nation, passing away after 70 years as the monarch, for whatever feelings you have about royalty or the monarchy or anything like that, this person had an extraordinary life. Queen Elizabeth II had an extraordinary life, and that's played out. It's still playing out in terms of the extraordinary journalism that's being written about her, the extraordinary footage that's being put out of a life that was literally faultless, a life of sacrifice, a life of service. And I think there's two ways to look at it. Events could have gone ahead and it could have been a celebration in the venues, as it was in some. You know, God Save the King was sung at Lourdes, at the cricket. It could have been a celebration of that. It could have been a celebration of women's sports as well. But I think it was the boxing board that took the decision, by the way, rather than the promoters the broadcasters. And I think as we look back on it, as we look back on this period, there'll be some voices like your own that are not sure whether we should have really stopped the event because other sporting events went ahead and boxing is very different. But I was pleased in the end that we weren't at a fight night event on Saturday night and that it was a national day of mourning. We weren't in a raucous atmosphere with fights going on, and that instead we were reflecting on on the passing of someone who is an extraordinary character in history, who never gave an opinion about people, who did some amazing things in their life, who I think who helped a lot of unity in a lot of countries. You can look at history and monarchy and imperialism and colonialism, all till the cows come home. And you can do that all over the world, all over society for 10,000 years. But this is definitely a remarkable life. And I just think it was the right decision in the end. It felt instinctively right. On Thursday night, I had a wander down to Buck Palace with my umbrella up, and it was somber. It was raining. A lot of people down there. I think ultimately it was the right decision, especially if they managed to get the event over the line for October the 15th.
Yeah, I guess that's the big thing, is that if for October the 15th, like all the stars aligned for the weekend, just gone, all the fighters were healthy, it was a full fight card, no excuses from anyone. And we know how difficult it is for, especially ladies as well, to make weight. I think that's something people don't discuss really. It's very, very difficult. So they're going to have to then, on the cusp of weighing in, now they're going to have to rehydrate and then make weight again October the 15th. So let's hope that everyone is okay and that the fight card does go ahead. I guess, look, my response at the time, and it's a difficult one, by the way, and I appreciate that as well. It's a difficult one. Some sports, as you say, went ahead, the cricket, the rugby. I think horse racing went ahead on Sunday, and some football and boxing didn't. And you can see how those sports are divided into certain camps. Some people will say that those other sports that went ahead are kind of, you know, elitist sports, and maybe football and boxing aren't. And the rowdiness with regards to them as well, the noise that will be made from certain sections of those sporting events might be a problem. But look, in the end, it's a difficult decision. It has been made. And I just hope, like you said, that the event does go ahead October the 15th, because unlike other sports, boxers simply don't get paid if they don't fight. Not everyone is attached to, you know, sponsors like AJ has and others have. If these ladies don't fight, there is no paycheck. Whereas football, you get paid every single week and you're getting paid hundreds of thousands of pounds. Boxing just isn't like that. Let's hear from promoter of the event, Ben Shalom. He spoke with TalkSport and explained why it was the right call to call off the event, despite the consequences it had on the fighters.
Given that this was such a huge celebration, given that this was a huge night of entertainment, given that I actually think boxing is slightly different to other sports in terms of the level of entertainment and brutality and noise that it creates, it was a difficult one to take, don't get me wrong, but ultimately accepted the board's decision. I think all the fighters did, and yes, organisationally and business-wise, it's a disaster, but I think sometimes on unique, very unique occasions like this one, you have to almost accept it.
Ben Shalom there speaking to Talk Sport. He goes on to kind of just say, and you heard it there, Gareth, kind of what I said as well, about the difference, I guess, between boxing and football. We can put them in the same bubble, and the other events that went on. Maybe they are a bit more rowdier. Maybe it is a bit more livelier. And maybe that ultimately was the decision that the British Boxing Board of Control sort of took when they made it.
Yeah, I think there is more of a solemnity to the other sports. And you have to take all the points on board that, that, you know, the fighters don't get paid if they fight, that it is difficult. They're tapering towards a weight cut and towards training camp. And it reflects a different light on the fact that, you know, that, what are we talking, 5 weeks later, the fight takes place now. Mm-hmm. And that it is a difficult thing for them, because what do? Do they rest for a week and then do they go back into camp? There isn't an algorithm. There isn't a book on it. There is, you know, so they've got to create their own algorithm for that. They're all great professionals. I mean, you saw a little bit of outpouring from Baumgartner and Mayer and Shields.
Yeah.
You know, when they were still stuck in their hotels on Saturday night and looking over at the O2 Arena from their balconies and doing drama. And because at that moment they were thinking about, you know, oh, this would have been my moment. But all will not be lost in my view, you know. I suppose that was your viewpoint as well, was that, you know, if they can get the fight, I don't know when, because I remember you putting a tweet out saying, I wish the boxing was going ahead.
Yeah.
Was that before?
That was before I knew about the announcement. That was a case of obviously Her Majesty the Queen has passed, and there were rumors circulating that events are going to be cancelled. And I was like, wow, you know, we've been
waiting. How do you put it on again? Yeah.
Yeah. You know, how do you put it on again? We've been waiting almost a year, really, for Savannah Clarissa.
Yeah.
And then you just don't know with injuries that they spar again. You just don't know what's going to happen.
Yeah.
But fingers crossed, stars are aligned. You mentioned sort of the tributes that boxers have given to Her Majesty the Queen. There were some lovely tributes as well. From the likes of Frank Warren. This is what he had to say about the legacy of Queen Elizabeth.
So, I mean, she came on the throne, I think it was the month I was born, so that's 70 years ago. And I mean, it's amazing what she'd done. I mean, she devoted her life to the service of the country. And she was, I suppose, well, she was the stability of the country, wasn't she? Through some difficult times and was loved by everybody. I can't think of anybody who... you know, who didn't have a strong, you know, strong emotional bond as far as the Queen was concerned. You know, Queen and country, that's what it's always been about.
Frank Warren there paying tribute to Queen Elizabeth. There will be more tributes throughout the show here as well. That was Frank Warren speaking to the boys on Fight Night on Saturday. Gareth, before we go to the break, we just want to mention some news that broke last night. Rumours circulating that Chris Eubank Sr. is looking to pull his son out of the fight with Conor Benn. We know that you have spoke with Rob Smith from the British Boxing Board of Control. Can you update us? What is going on? There's a lot of panic on social media right now that this fight won't go ahead. I believe it will. What can you tell us?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, it's when was the press conference? A month ago?
Yeah.
Senior had a chance to say something then about it. He's obviously made this statement, and I spoke to the Boxing Board of Control this morning, Robert Smith, who said to me that there are no concerns at this time. They're monitoring Chris Eubank Jr.'s weight all the way up to the fight, something that they've done many times when things like this happen. They will do regular weight checks with him all the way up to the fight. And as he said, there's no concerns at this time. And that, you know, the fight's going ahead. And I can't see why Chris Eubank Jr., other than his father refusing to be in his corner with him. He's got Ronnie Davis anyway in his corner. That's the only kind of scuttling that's going on in terms of negativity for Chris Eubank Jr. It's not going to help him that his father has now decided that he doesn't want to fight. But if I recall rightly, Chris Eubank Jr. also did an interview with me a little while back saying how his father said, hold on and do the fight in a stadium next year when it would be an even bigger fight. So, you have to respect the feelings of the father here in some ways, I think, because he's concerned for his son. And Sebastian passed away last year as well. And, you know, that was a big moment for the family, and it's tragedy for the family. And maybe it's made him just reflect, and he's just expressing his views.
Yeah. And look, it's a difficult weight cut, 157 pounds. And then there's this rehydration clause put in as well, where he can't come above 168. Do you think there's any wiggle room there? Do you think there is a case of, I don't know, Team Ben coming together with Team Eubank said, okay, look, 158, maybe a pound, 159.
I don't think it's about that. And you know, my understanding is that the weight check on him is 11 in the morning on the Saturday.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
So, you know, he's going to be able to rehydrate between then and in the 11 or 8, say 8, 9, 10 hours before they fight. That's my understanding, by the way. So... No, I mean, I remember Tony Sims, Conor Benn's trainer, also saying if Chris is above a certain weight, the fight won't go ahead anyway. If you recall,
yeah.
So it's complex. You know, it's a fight that has excited the nation because of what happened between their fathers 30 years ago. There is an element of gimmickry in this fight. There's no question about it. One is coming up and one is coming down. It's the perfect time to meet in terms of it being a prize fight. Yeah. That's what it is, a prize fight.
And the prize is a lot as well.
It's fascinating. It is fascinating. And with Chris Eubank, with the Eubanks and the Bens involved, there was always going to be some drama on the way to the fight anyway. And we've got a little bit here.
Yeah, indeed. Look, you're listening to Fight Night Extra on TalkSport 2. We have some big breaking news, by the way. We're going to discuss it in the next section. But still to come, we'll reflect on an eventful night at UFC 279. We are going to hear from Joseph Parker ahead of his fight with Joe Joyce next week. But up next, we're going to discuss the trilogy being Canelo Alvarez and Gennady Golovkin. You're listening to Final Extra on TalkSport 2 and myself, Adi Oladipo, Gareth A. Davis alongside me as well. You heard me mention the big breaking news before the break. The big breaking news is AJ's management company, 258 Management, have accepted all the terms for the mega showdown with Tyson Fury. This fight, ladies and gentlemen, again, this is the big breaking news, will go ahead. Gareth, look, I know that you know everything that happens behind the scenes in boxing. There's no doubt as we are doing this now, you're probably repping your articles and getting things out. What can you tell us? It looks like we are going to see this fight in December.
Yeah, no, we are. I think we are. I was getting soundings. Had Frank Warren on the phone anyway over the weekend, and he said they didn't want to talk about it. I'd been getting soundings from my sources that it really, that Joshua had bitten the bullet, and he thought, you know what, I'm going to take it. And I think it might even be December the 3rd, but I think they'll stretch it in the end to December the 17th in Cardiff. It'll be one of those two dates. And that, you know, Joshua's actually, this is what I've heard, he's just thought, you know what, I might as well take this fight now. I think, again, just to go back to the passing of Queen Elizabeth II, I think when big, and this is where I think we do have to have kind of not be in a too quick world sometimes where we don't stop to consider things and we don't stop to reflect. I've got a feeling that the events last week also made Joshua and his team think, you know what? Look how quickly the world can change. Look how quickly things can change in the world. I'll just take my opportunity now. I think that the risks for Joshua are that if he gets badly beaten in this fight, if it's a great fight and it's a points victory for Fury and Joshua shows improvements again, I think we'll get two fights with them, frankly. But if he, you know, if he gets schooled and if he gets knocked out, if Fury does a number on Joshua, and he may not, it's heavyweight boxing at the end of the day, and Joshua's throwing all his chips in here. I think it's a great move. As I said, I didn't think it was the right time for him to take it. If he wanted to have 5, 6, 7 fights and see out the DAZN contract and all those kind of things, because it's a big risk against definitely the number one heavyweight in the division. And the number one for a long time, you know, the best heavyweight for a long time. And I think, but I hate to say this, but if it doesn't go right for Joshua in this fight, it could be his last fight.
It could be. And I agree with you here. I said that Joshua's got a big decision to make. Do you have the biggest British fight of all time? And it still is that. Numbers will show how big it is when it is, when it's all said and done. Or do you almost get your confidence back? Look, we saw him pretty much have a breakdown at the end of his last fight. Do you get your confidence back, get a couple of wins against quote unquote easier fights, maybe a couple more camps with Robert Garcia, or do you go straight for Tyson Fury? And I almost feel like it could be a win for both. AJ is desperate to fight, if you like, one of the biggest names of this era. I know people might say Usyk, but it always was Fury and Wilder. He now gets to do that. And for Fury, I've always said that when it comes to Fury, and we're having this all-time great discussion about heavyweights, there needs to be some names on that resume for me for Fury. He's now starting to build that with back-to-back Wilder fights, a Dillian White fight, an AJ fight, potentially an Usyk fight down the line as well. And I think the most important thing here is it looks like British fight fans are the winners, because it looks like, and again, you'll probably know a bit more about this than I do, Gareth, it looks like the fight could happen over here.
Oh no, I think it is. I think it is here.
And that's massive.
Yeah, I know it is. I think it will be Cardiff, unless I've had an extraneous offer come in over the last 3 or 4 days. But you know, George Warren, Eddie Hearn, Bob Arum was over here last week, which helped, I think. You know, Frank, you know, it's on the surface, Bob Arum and Frank Warren don't get on with Eddie Hearn. You know, we see all the barbs all the time, but you know, I wrote a column last week, kind of an old school message, really, was that Joshua needs to rebuild and progress.
But I read that and I agreed with everything you said in that.
Yeah, well, thank you. Yeah. I mean, but it was put out there, not because, you know, the world out there, the boxing fandom, of course I want to see the fight this year. Of course I want to. But I was just trying to give a perspective on a longevity for Joshua in his career. But maybe that's not the right thing. You know, maybe, you know, like I said as well, after his reaction to losing to Usyk, the shackles are off him.
Yeah.
And that this is a sign that the shackles are off.
Yeah.
You know, flip it, as they'd say. Flip it, I'm going to do it, you know. Could have used an expletive there, but it's not. It's like he's going, yeah, I'm going to take it. I'm going to go for this fight. I'm going to go for this fight and give my all against Fury. Massive event for British boxing fans. And I do hope this isn't a false positive today.
What if, Gareth, and you mentioned the possibility of him, you know, potentially getting beaten badly and then calling it quits. What if he just loses and then that's four out of his last six that he's lost? How big of a star still is he? Bear in mind, he has signed this mega deal with DAZN. If he does lose again, and that'll be three in a row.
How does he lose? But say
he loses wide, 117, 112,
yeah,
wide.
Yeah. I think there's still a Dillian White fight there and there's still a Deontay Wilder fight there.
Yeah, okay.
But it's how he looks in there. If he shows improvement again, you know what Fury's going to do. He's going to move and bamboozle him and tie him up and move him quickly and tie him up and try and confuse Anthony, you know, as he does with so many opponents. But I think there'll be moments of drama in the fight.
I really do as well.
I really think there'll be moments of drama. And what you've got to remember with Fury is that even though he goes out and he calls them bum dossers and this, that, and the other, and he does take his opponents really seriously. I've had the privilege of being in his changing room, in his dressing room, twice before he's walked out to fight Wilder, just moments before he walks out. And he is in the zone. He's almost, I've said it's almost trance-like, Addie. You know, he will be taking Joshua very seriously because this is legacy failing for him if he loses. Because then they've got to have a look. I mean,
for boxing,
it's an incredible story.
If AJ wins for boxing, it's ridiculous.
Yeah, absolutely, ridiculous, yeah. Absolutely. I mean, it's great that it's on. It's great that it's seemingly on. You know. We're all over it today. Yeah.
We certainly are. Look, we're going to cover this in many, many more fight nights and fight night extras before we get to December 3rd. And fingers crossed we do get there. Let's talk about a fight we know 100% is happening. And that's this weekend, T-Mobile Arena, Las Vegas, the trilogy. 4 years in the making, this trilogy between...
Five.
Apologies. You're right. Five years in the making between Canelo and GGG. Look at what Canelo's done since their second fight. Gone on to become undisputed at 168, won a belt at 175, fought Dimitri Bivol. GGG hasn't really done that much since then. What chance do you give a 40-year-old GGG going up 8 pounds to 168 to take on Canelo?
We're talking about weight a lot, aren't we? Look, the romantic in me, and I'm not often like this, the philosopher in me, the romantic, the man that would love to see poetic justice.
Ooh, wants to I like see that. The I love that.
Yeah, wants to see the Gennady Golovkin of old, blocking stuff, impervious to punches, walking through walls, and just having those freakishly powerful levers that just hurt people. The reality is that Father Time waits for no man, certainly no fighter, no woman, female fighter. So he was slow against Ryoto Murata at the beginning. And Ryoto Murata Ryoto Murata is a very fine boxer. I'm pretty sure he was an Olympic gold medalist.
London. World Championship silver medalist.
Yeah, it was London. The gold was London.
Yeah.
Very, very fine boxer out of a very strong Japanese tradition. But Gennady looked a little bit slow starting in that fight and a bit vulnerable to body shots. Which is exactly where Canelo Alvarez targets, of course. He puts out those amazing videos of him going, dipping and going up with that left to the body. The most famous punch he has that was spotted early. I think Canelo's quite a big favourite in this fight. They're going into the 25th round scale. It's been a high-level boxing match so far.
Incredible.
Canelo is more of a bruiser now than he ever was. He just seems to attack opponents really well. I think there may be a big size differential that we notice this time in terms of the bulking of the fighters. Canelo was always very terse.
Yeah, his neck, very stout and thick.
Exactly. You know, very hench, isn't he? He's
really hench. He's that's hench, the right word.
And I don't know. I've been live at the last 24 rounds between them, so it was amazing. I think it could be a close fight again, but it wouldn't surprise me. I don't think Canelo will stop Golovkin, but that's because I've got so much history with Golovkin and being around his fights and seeing how tough he is. But the big 4-0 could tell. I mean, there's an argument that the first fight was Golovkin's and the second one was a draw, by the way.
That's why when you mentioned Poetic Justice at the top there, I would love to see Gennady Golovkin win. I would absolutely love it. Big fan of his, the way he's conducted himself in and out of the ring. He's gave me so many great nights watching him. Just as a fan, not working in boxing, just as a fan, I've loved sort of watching what he's done for the sport. And even just the way he's sort of, you know, his English has improved and he's able to sell the fights. And I would love it. But like you, I can't see it. I just don't want him to get stopped. That would hurt me, him being stopped. But I think it's going to be a good fight. I think it's going to surprise a few people. I don't think it's going to be sort of just one-way Canelo. Bear in mind, Canelo's coming off a loss as well. So mentally, where is he? But I think it's going to be a really, really good fight. You're listening to Fighter Extra on TalkSport 2. Still to come, we are going to reflect on Nate Diaz's swan song at UFC 279. But up next, we're going to be speaking with Mr. Joseph Parker. Welcome back. You're listening to Fighter Extra on TalkSport 2. Myself, Adi Oladipo, and the great Gareth A. Davis with you. Next week, one of the most anticipated fights in the heavyweight division comes to the UK as Joseph Parker and Joe Joyce meet at the AO Arena in Manchester. I caught up with Parker yesterday to look ahead to the fight and asked how it felt to finally be fighting Joe Joyce after months of back and forth between the pair. Joseph Parker there, Gareth, in great spirits. You heard me say, like, how are you so sort of jovial and sort of in good spirits leading up to such what you know is going to be a very, very difficult fight against Joe Joyce? You heard him mention sort of being in camp with Tyson Fury as well. And no wonder that's just sort of seeping through. Tyson Fury looks like he loves camp. And I feel like Joseph Parker has almost become that as well now.
Yeah, look, the fact that Tyson Fury will have an extra zipping in, the runs will be earlier, the talk will be louder, the body sparring together will be more frequent. If this Joshua fight is now going ahead, it will give an extra zip and feeling to the last couple of weeks of his camp. By the way, of course, we haven't mentioned it, that fight night is live on TalkSport. The whole team's up there in Manchester for Parker and Joyce, which is brilliant, for Joyce Parker. So can't wait to be up there. It's a big fight in the heavyweight division, even though it's not necessarily one that's going to set fire to the whole world, Eddie. It's a really big fight. Outside the top four, the top five, Joshua, Fury, Usyk, Wilder, this is a big fight,
massive division. Agreed.
It's big because it puts the winner in the waiting room, and it's a big test for Joe Joyce, a real step up in level, a former WBO heavyweight champion, a guy that's been 12 rounds with Anthony Joshua, some great fights with Dillian White and Chisora. He's part of the fabric of our heavyweight scene here as Joe Parker. So, and he's a fantastic human being at the end of the day as well.
Yeah, Joseph Parker's fought the better opposition. Again, former world champion. I mentioned that Andy Ruiz win looks better and better now as time goes on. Joe Joyce, though, the slight favourite just because of this momentum that he's on. Unbeaten, he seems to be the fighter that no one can stop right now. Who do you make as a favourite, Gareth?
I think Joe Joyce, just to pip it, you know, to come strong in the late rounds and take a decision in this fight. But I think it'll be pretty close. I think it's going to be pretty close. Really looking forward to it. September 24th, Manchester Arena, with BT Sport, of course, and Talk Sport there as well.
Talk Sport will be there as well. Again, thank you so much for BT Sport for allowing us to do that interview as well. But it is live on Talk Sport, as Gareth said, and live on BT Sport. All right, you're listening to Fighter Extra on Talk Sport 2. Next up, we're talking UFC 279 and a final fight in the UFC for now for Nate Diaz and the company's newest villain, Khamzat Chimaev. How do you look so relaxed when you've got such a big fight? I don't know how you do it.
Listen, when you put in the work,
yeah,
and you're enjoying every part of camp, the training, the eating, the relaxing, the game, whatever it is, playing poker with the boys,
yeah,
it's like you're in a good place and a good space going into the fight.
How is it now under Andy Lee? This is what, a few fight camps now since you left Kevin. What's it been like under Andy? Andy seems like such a cool guy. I work with him a lot. He's so relaxed. What's it been like?
I enjoy working with Andy. I had 8 years with Kevin and we achieved a lot, but moving here and working with Andy, it's I feel like revived as a fighter. And I feel got a lot more, the passion that I did sort of lose for boxing, I got it right back. And I love it. I love everything. I love camp life. I do miss my family, but I love camp life. I love like the, that's all we do, right? I think all the fighters out there know that's train, eat, sleep, repeat. And it's getting you in the top shape for the fight. And I'm just, I'm loving every moment of it.
So much success with Kevin. As you say, look, you became world champion. That fight now that I feel like it's gone bigger than Andy Ruiz. We're now looking back because of what Andy's done in his career. It's gone bigger. But I remember watching the junior far fight and I remember thinking personally, okay, Joseph maybe looks a bit flat here. This isn't the Joseph Parker that we know. Certainly not the Joseph Parker that we've seen now. Did it just become maybe a bit stale under Kevin?
Stale, and it was just the same, same. And it's, there's no one to blame. Yeah. It's just one of those things where I just needed change. And I needed a new environment. I needed a new coach and a new team. And like you said, nothing wrong with the old team. Very thankful and grateful. But it's what I needed to do at this stage of my career. And wholeheartedly, I felt like I made the right move. And we've seen improvements in the first Chisora fight. The second one, a lot better. And this is my third camp with Andy. So I'm going to make this the best camp.
Yeah. I was there for the Chisora fight. And look, you've had some good performances over the years, but I said to everyone that could hear me, that's the best Joseph Parker I've seen. In terms of, everyone always says, Joseph, you know, he starts slow sometimes. You went straight at Chisora that time. Is that the Joseph Parker now going forward? Sort of fast start, good engine, action, output?
I think so. Listen, I think so. I think so because I'm tired of being involved in boring fights. And I have been involved in boring fights where I've just boxed and moved around and just got the points and didn't really engage. Like, I want to be all part of the action. I want all the action. I want to engage and I want to get right in there. Obviously, be smart with the boxing, but make it more, just make it more exciting.
Yeah. And that's what you're giving us. Again, that Chisora performance was as good as it got, right? Going forward now, Joe Joyce, a different animal, you know, the juggernaut. Everyone says, oh, you know, he's got a chin that can't be detonated. How do you prepare for someone like that when you know it probably, likely will go the 12 rounds?
Yeah, listen, if you look at it, everyone thinks it'll go to 12 rounds because we're both durable. Or I see a lot of people say that I'm going to get stopped because he's, you know, he's got this big engine and he's a power puncher. And he punches in combinations and, you know, he punches in bunches. He chases you down, puts you on the back foot. But, you know, it just comes down to the training that you put in and the sparring partners that you have. And if you prepare well and properly for the person that you're fighting, like, I have no worries. I have no doubts that I've done everything right in this camp. And I'm going into this fight full of confidence that I can put it on him.
It's strange how you both wanted this. I look at it from a normal human standpoint. I'm like, why would both of these guys want to do this? Like, why would you want to fight the juggernaut? Why would the juggernaut want to fight you? It was close to not happening. We know. Yeah. I remember Frank announced it at that Fury White show, and then it didn't happen, and now it's happening. Why do you want to fight Joe? Like, there are other fights out there for you. Why Joe Joyce?
You know, from the Chisora fight, I felt that I improved as a fighter with Andy. And for me, it's not about going backwards. Yeah. It's about going forwards. And the person that's in front of me ranked highly above me in the WBC and WBO is Joe Joyce. And a lot of people sort of stepped away from wanting to fight him. I want to go straight for it and I want the challenge. And I made it clear to Sky and to Boxer when I did sign with him that, please, can you guys go out there and try and make this fight happen? So I'm very thankful to the team that I have because now they've made it happen. And we're both fighting on BT Sports. And once I do beat him in September, the rematch is going to be on Sky.
Joseph, are you surprised by the loving that you get from the UK fight fans? I mean, we've seen you over here. Look, some good fights, some defeats, but they seem to really get behind you. And that's quite rare, right? I mean, normally, like this fight, I genuinely believe if you asked to ask 100 Brits, you're fighting a Brit, but I think it would be split down the line in who they want to win. Does that surprise you?
It does surprise me. And, you know, I'm just thankful for everyone here. In the UK, like here in Morecambe, everyone calls me Morecambe Joe. Like, I'm just like, I'm like a local. You know? So it's, I am surprised and very thankful and grateful for the support I do get here. And I don't feel like I'm in a strange place. And I don't feel like I'm in a foreign country. I feel like I'm at home. And I've made this place my home.
Mm. Your mental state looks really good as well. Your mental strength, I think, has always been sort of top level. Has it gone up another level, sort of been in and around camp with Tyson Fury, who mental game for me is like through the roof?
Listen, when you surround yourself with people who, like Tyson, you know, the champ, WBC champion of the world, and someone who has that mental capabilities of going far beyond what, people think he can achieve. It's like when you surround yourself with these type of people and Andy Lee talking to you every day about game plans, about the fight, about fight game, about history of boxing, you only pick up your game and you only strengthen yourself physically and mentally.
Mm. I think the heavyweight division right now is as good as it's ever been, right? So many big fights to be made. Wilder is now back. We saw Ruiz recently, AJ Fury. Is it a case of chasing another title? Is it just a case of having great fights against these other good competitors?
The title is always what everyone dreams of having, and to be two-time world champion would be fantastic. But my focus is just going fight by fight, enjoying the process, enjoying every moment of it, because sometimes you think too far ahead that you don't enjoy the process of camp and of just training sessions, the runs that you do, then you miss out on it, and you think after the fight, oh, I wish I sort of just was present. So now for me, it's just fight by fight, and the next person in front of me is Joyce. I'm going to give that full attention, my full 100% attention.
Yeah, I understand. It'd be so right. Fantastic fight. I can't wait for it. You know, you mentioned your time with Andy Lee. This is now the third fight camp with Andy Lee. How long do you think it takes to get in sync with a trainer? You were with Kevin for so many years to the point where it was almost a case of you guys knew each other without even having to talk. How long do you think it takes to get in sync with a new trainer?
The first camp I had with Andy was about 6 to 7 weeks, something 6 weeks. Mm. And we saw glimpses of the change that was in process with me, with Andy and I in that first camp. The second camp sort of solidified a lot of the things that he was trying to teach me, and I was understanding it a bit more. So I think it takes about 10 weeks, but you have to keep practicing all these things when you're by yourself in your own country and when you're at home. Because if you don't practice it, you tend to forget about it, you know, straight away. So I was practicing it every day in front of the mirror, just looking at myself and practicing what Andy wanted me to do.
You mentioned that you're in Morecambe now. You're away from family. I know you're a big family man. How difficult is it being away from the wife and kids?
That's for me. Boxing is the hardest part, is leaving the family. The training every day, I'm enjoying it. I'm loving being with the team, being in camp. But the only thing missing is the family. You know, and I do miss my kids. And when they go to school, they're crying and on the phone. That, you know, when are you going to come back? And how long you've been away for so long? So that is the hardest part. But I'm here to do it for myself first and foremost, and for them, my immediate family, my wife and kids. And hopefully in the future, they'll be proud of what we've done.
I think they're proud now, Joseph, because you're achieving so much. You're in these big fights. As we kind of wrap up camp now, what do you do between now and the 24th? Give us an insight as to what plays out in camp.
Yeah, this week will still be a solid, hard week of training. We got sparring, Wednesday, strength work. You know, Thursday will be sparring again. Friday, depending on what Andy wants, might be sparring again. And then the week of the fight is when you sort of taper off. And you do the normal things, a press conference, public workout, if there's one, and weigh in.
Mm. Joseph, look, I think this is going to be an incredible fight. I really do. I'll say this now. Of all the fights that I think heavyweight fights this year, this is the one that I'm most looking forward to. As soon as this was announced, I was like, okay, we've got two guys here that I think are knocking on that door for a top five sort of ranking. Maybe some might say you guys are already there. And the winner of this is right at the door of a world title. So I think it's going to be a great fight. Just before I let you go, what can fans expect September 24th?
Listen, Joe Joyce brings it. And he's always in, you know, with his style, it's going to make it an entertaining fight. And I'm sure they're going to bring it as well. We've been working hard in camp. I'm in great shape, mentally, physically. And I can't wait to be involved in a great fight come September 24th.
Can I quickly just touch on, Joe, just before I let you go, I've got to ask you, you're a heavyweight fighter. You would have seen the AJ Usyk fight and how it played out. AJ with a new trainer, Robert Garcia. If you were to sort of give words of advice to AJ, is it stick with Robert Garcia and sort of learn from him, switch trainers? What would you do, having switched from Kevin yourself?
You know, with the first fight with Andy, if I take myself, I think a longer time with a trainer is better.
Mm.
You know, first camp is always just getting to know each other and changing a few things. Second camp sort of solidifies it more. And in the third camp, you can add more, you know, sort of tactics to your weapons, you know. So I think if he has longer time with someone, I think that's my advice anyways.
Joseph Parker there, Gareth, in great spirits. You heard me say, like, how are you so sort of jovial and sort of in good spirits leading up to such what you know is going to be a very, very difficult fight against Joe Joyce. You heard him mention sort of being in camp with Tyson Fury as well. And I wonder if that's just sort of seeping through. Tyson Fury looks like he loves camp. And I feel like Joseph Parker has almost become that as well now.
Yeah, look, the fact that Tyson Fury will have an extra zipping in, the runs will be earlier, the talk will be louder, the body sparring together will be more frequent. If this Joshua fight is now going ahead, it will give an extra zip and feeling to the last couple of weeks of his camp. By the way, of course, we haven't mentioned it, that fight night is live on TalkSport. The whole team's up there in Manchester for Parker and Joyce, which is brilliant for Joyce Parker. So can't wait to be up there. It's a big fight in the heavyweight division, even though it's not necessarily one that's going to set fire to the whole world, Eddie. It's a really big fight. Outside the top four, the top five, Joshua, Fury, Usyk, Wilder, this is a big fight,
massive,
in the heavyweight
division.
Fight.
Agreed.
It's big because it puts the winner in the waiting room, and it's a big test for Joe Joyce, a real step up in level, a former WBO heavyweight champion, a guy that's been 12 rounds with Anthony Joshua, some great fights with Dillian White and Chisora. He's part of the fabric of our heavyweight scene here, as Joe Parker. So, and he's a fantastic human being at the end of the day as well.
Yeah, Joseph Parker's fought the better opposition. Again, former world champion. I mentioned that Andy Ruiz win looks better and better now as time goes on. Joe Joyce, though, the slight favourite just because of this momentum that he's on. Unbeaten. He seems to be the fighter that no one can stop right now. Who do you make as a favourite, Gareth?
I think Joe Joyce, just a pippet, you know, to come strong in the late rounds and take a decision in this fight. But I think it'd be pretty close. I think it's going to be pretty close. Really looking forward to it. September 24th, Manchester Arena, with BT Sport, of course, and Talk Sport there as well.
Talk Sport will be there as well. Again, thank you so much for BT Sport for allowing us to do that interview as well. But it is live on Talk Sport, as Gareth said, and live on BT Sport. All right, you're listening to Final Extra on Talk Sport 2. Next up, we're talking UFC 279 and a final fight in the UFC for now for Nate Diaz and the company's newest villain, Khamzat Chimaev.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads, generally for most people, are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
You're listening to Final Extra on TalkSport 2 and myself, Adi Oladipo, and the great Gareth A. Davis. All right, Gareth, let's talk UFC 279. I mean, I was thoroughly disappointed with all the boxing being cancelled on the weekend. And then when I heard that Khamzat missed weight, I was like, come on, I need some combat sport in my life over the weekend. And then it all just seemed to play out well for the UFC, right? They know how to somehow do all this. In the end, we got a main event of Nate Diaz versus Tony Ferguson, which just seemed right for some reason, like two veterans fighting. I thought Khamzat would have ragdolled Nate Diaz, if I'm honest with you. So it all just seemed perfect and a perfect way for Nate to go out. What did you make of all the week? Khamzat now the heel of, of the MMA world and Nate Diaz fighting Tony?
Well, look, I think you can construct lots of conspiracy theories around this. That it was some kind of Machiavellian scheme in the background was trying to, you know, the decision was, oh my God, this is going to look too lopsided with Khamzat Chimaev destroying Nate Diaz, and maybe not the way they wanted Diaz to go out. I know Nate and Nick for a long time, a really long time. I've been to Stockton to see them. I've ever told you the story where I went to try and find Nate.
I would pay to go to Stockton to see
them. Yeah, well, I mean, I did pay. I was in California, and I was in a hire car, and Nate had agreed to see me. I drove to their gym in Stockton, you know, smashed window there, a little bullet hole through the corner somewhere, and I hung out in Stockton and waited for Nate, and he wasn't there. And he said, oh, brah, sorry, man. My girl made me go down to the beach today. So I followed him around down to there. Then I ended up going to San Francisco to Gilbert Melendez's gym, and he wasn't there. And it was like a Hunter S. Thompson. I wrote a long piece about it, Fighters Only magazine, a few years ago, actually, like a few thousand words on it, about driving through the bios and through the over bridges. And everywhere I went, it was the invisible Nate Diaz. And he sent me a text saying, oh, bro, I've moved on.
That is so Nate Diaz. It's spot on.
Well, years ago, I went to see them in Pleasant Hill, in just north of San Francisco, with Cesar Gracie, who I love to see there on Saturday night, his jiu-jitsu trainer, Gil Melendez, Jake Shields, Nick and Nate, the Scrap Pack, as they were called. I've got a Scrap Pack t-shirt, believe it. I don't have many t-shirts of people. And I went to see all the boys that day and spent the whole day with them. And it was actually ahead of Nick Diaz fighting George St. Pierre.
Oh, wow.
And I had an amazing day with all of them. So, you know, I've known them a long time, and they're very kind to me. You know, they're I feel like they treat me like their mad uncle at times, but they're very iconic in the sport. So the whole backdrop to that last week, I actually didn't mind at all when it came to, and I stayed up and watched the event live after getting back from Talk Sport on Saturday night, a very somber show, of course, as we looked deeply over the 3 hours at Adam Cashel, myself, into, you know, the life of the Queen and so on, and had talked a bit about fight sports. But I was really pleased because I thought the matchup with Ferguson was the right one in the end, with El Cucuy in the end, was the right one, because they danced well on the night. They showed all their moves. They, you know, because as we saw in the fight before them, and I'm jumping ahead here a little bit, but Chimaev destroyed Kevin Holland, wasn't it? Absolutely destroyed Holland in an amazing way as well.
I mean, by the way, I did not expect that.
It didn't surprise me.
I know that Kevin Holland doesn't have the best wrestling, but I thought, okay, he's, you know, supposedly a black belt in jiu-jitsu, that if Chimaev takes him down, he'll be able to defend it, do something.
No, but he did. He just got him right. It was... He's a beast. He's a monster.
He's a monster.
I'm Muhammad Ali and I'm Mike Tyson. He's a monster.
He's a monster.
Do you think he turned himself into the villain on last week?
I think that he doesn't even care or know if he's doing it. But he was getting booed by the crowd. He got booed at the weigh-in. And I feel like it's okay. I love it. I love the idea of him. And that's why, in my head, and sorry, we are jumping around here, I feel like because he's the villain, him versus Kobe Covington would be enormous.
It would, but here's enormous. The problem. Here's Go the
on.
Problem.
Go on.
He clearly was struggling with the weight. It wasn't an act.
Yeah.
According to him, as he spoke to Joe Rogan in the Octagon afterwards, he was struggling with the weight, but he said, I would have carried on doing it. It was the doctor that pulled him out. And that's believable as well, by the way.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
He is a, what's he, 6'2"
6'2"
He's a really big welterweight. The big problem for him is this. As he's growing as a man, what's he now, 27, 28?
Mm.
I'm not sure. I think he's around that. His problem is he's not going to be the same at middleweight. Because they're all that big.
Agree. Look at Pereira that's going to fight Adesanya. He's like 6'5".
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And look, I'm not saying Chimaev couldn't beat Israel Adesanya. He could.
Oh, he certainly can. Yeah.
Oh, he could. There's no question. But At welterweight, he's a wrecking machine. At 170, he's a wrecking machine. And there he is, Mike Tyson, Muhammad Ali. But at middleweight, it all equalizes. That's 50. That's another stone in weight. So just to cap that bit off before, because I know we need to talk about the end for, maybe the end for Tony Ferguson and maybe a new light for Nate Diaz and his crew. Mm. Chimaev is definitely an amazing talent. I think he'll be one of those lightning rod fighters that's brilliant for five or six fights and then probably wears out. I don't see him being around for 5 years doing it because I don't think that's there anymore for them. There's always someone else coming through. But yeah, I mean, he's an amazing fighter. He's from that group, isn't he, that have come out of war-torn Eastern Europe.
It's scary. I find him a scary, scary individual.
Yeah, but he's and I love the fact that he's got Darren Till in there now.
Yeah, that almost seems to, like, it's a weird mix having Darren in there, who's a jovial, fun, can be serious character. It's just really weird, but it
he's
works.
A great person to have around, I think, Darren very, Till, by the way.
Very, very good.
A great person. And he's helped Chimaev create humour around himself and a different kind of feeling at times as well.
I was thinking, and look, Gareth, you've covered the UFC from the get-go, really. You've followed it from really the beginning. But I was kind of thinking, obviously, Conor had this amazing rise, but I can't remember a fighter after only, what's he had now, 4 fights in the UFC, Chimaev? I can't remember a fighter with this ascendancy, that quick. Like, just that fear factor. I was looking at his social media numbers as well, and they've just literally gone through the roof.
Yeah, but they haven't got many natural stars that they can grow at the moment. You know, Khabib left early, Conor left early in a certain way, or left in it. Well, Conor's Conor. It's an up and down story. John Jones hasn't been there, but it looks like he's coming back this year, which is amazing. I think Darren Till's fighting later in the year as well.
He is.
I think they're all New York fights, aren't they? His is. They need these stars, and they've got a huge PR machine, a huge marketing machine. So, in that respect, you know, if you've got it, they'll flaunt it.
Let's wrap and we'll end. Let's give the final say to Nate Diaz. Again, just especially someone that came in off the back of his brother Nick, and Nick was the superstar, and Nate was the guy from I think Ultimate Fighter 5.
Yes,
Nick.
It wasn't it?
Yeah. And the career he's had, obviously highlighted by that win over Conor McGregor. It looks like he will go into boxing now. Potentially, he could be fighting Jake Paul if Jake Paul gets past Anderson Silva. That's where the money is for him. How would you?
He's a bit too good a boxer for Jake Paul.
Oh, I'm far too good.
I don't see that happening. I mean, it's a very bad matchup for Jake Paul. But having said that, I think Nate knows how to carry something as well. You know, I mean, again, it's that blurred grey area. You know, that we have to think, we have to stop ourselves and go, let's consider this again in the environment and in the roles that we have. And broadcast very seriously about it because, again, it's still on the element of freak show.
Agreed.
Jake Paul signed to fight Anderson Silva, for goodness sake.
You have to be very careful with these matchups.
I know we're finishing the show now, but I think that's a weird matchup, Anderson Silva and Jake Paul, frankly.
We'll see how it plays out. Nate did say that.
Well, I see Jake Paul getting knocked out.
I see Anderson Silva destroying him. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I see.
That's what I hope happens. I don't know, 47-year-old Anderson Silva, but that's what I hope happens. Very quickly on this one, Nate did say that he is the original Ultimate Fighter. And you look at the longevity, and you just mentioned their fighters coming in and out quickly, 4 or 5 year stints. He's been there since Ultimate Fighter 5. And I know he's had his breaks, you know, arguments with the UFC top brass, but look at the run that he's had and the fighters he's fought. He is the original Ultimate Fighter, isn't he? When you think of what it's all about, he's that.
Yeah. What is it? Is it 15 years in the UFC or something?
15.
Yeah. It's unbelievable. That kind of thing ain't going to happen anymore, brother. That ain't going to happen anymore. They're all, the way they fight now, the way they're conditioned, it's a 7-year career max for me. for those guys in the UFC. That's a long time now in the UFC. 15 fights in the UFC now a long resume, especially if you're going up. Yeah, incredible guy, incredible career. It's been privilege. I mean, I don't think he'll go anywhere, but it's a privilege to be around those guys because they're so unique and so authentic as well in who they are and how they are and how they do it.
Certainly are. Gareth, you're authentic and you're unique as well, my man. Appreciate it as always. Thank you very much. You have been listening to Fight Night Extra.
That's it for this week. Thank you so much for downloading our Fight Night Extra. Remember, we're back every single Tuesday for more great content. And if you miss us, make sure you subscribe to Fight Night to catch up on all our other episodes.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.